Blog Talk Radio.
Today is Sunday, the 7th of February. This is the 7th day of African American History Month. It also is the 7th day of Heart Health Month. Now, why am I combining those two? Well, there's a good reason. Because African American history has to be taught, because heart health must be taught, because I am the health reverend, and my job help people live well. So I am doing that as with every opportunity that I get, or every opportunity that I can create. As usual, I want to start out with my IT moment. And you may be wondering what happened to the music. Well, it's coming. It really is coming. Actually, this is the truth. I am going to give my producer what I want him to say. I'm going to give him his lines, and then soon thereafter, he's going to give me back something very, very nice to publish, and I'm going to publish it, and I'll be right there. My IT moment today, I just want to tell you that I have made a blundering mistake. I have blundered, I should say. So what happened was I was using an iPhone 4. And for all of its little itty-bitty things that I could find to not like, the one thing that I really did like about the iSystem is the camera on the iPhone. You see, I take a lot of pictures. I depend very heavily on pictures for my blog spots and my postings on LinkedIn. So I don't, however, like the limitations, not necessarily the limitations, of the requirements of the iSystem. So since the last time I spoke to you, I have been through three carriers. First I was with Straight Talk, then I went to Metro, then I went to Boost. Okay, so why did I go to Metro? Obviously, cost. But after I got all signed up and everything, and I had to think it over, I realized that I wasn't getting this as good a deal, because there is a way to increase your coverage with Boost as time passes. Metro doesn't have that. But the other thing is that Metro pulled a switch on me. They pulled the switch on me, and it turned out when I got home and looked at my receipt, which I should have done while I was there, it turned out that I had been signed up for something entirely different from what I asked for. Okay, that was one thing. Then I go back over to Boost, and guess what happened? The same phone that Metro gave me, Boost gave me its first cousin. And there's so much alike that you have to really pay attention to see that you're not using the same item. Now, obviously, one big thing to look at when we are talking about technology is the tool that's in your hand, and not just the service provider. So the tool that's now in my hand is the LG Tribute 5. Yeah, it does have a 5-inch screen. My only problem is the camera. Now, as soon as I work it out so that I get better focus, my camera just doesn't focus very sharply. And that was one of the ideal things about the i4, is that it had a beautiful camera. So if I can get that worked out, then I'll just go ahead and stay where I am. You know, I won't be going off all willy-nilly and switching again. But if not, then I will have to see about getting that iPhone 4 connected to Straight Talk. Oh, my gosh. Or Boost, because Boost does at least have local stores and you can go and talk to people. Now, of course, Metro does, but none here in the town where I live, nor does Cricket have anything here in the town where I live. So as far as the IT moment is concerned, All I want to tell you is that something that you already know anyhow, but I just want to tell you that you have to, you already know though, that you have to do some research, but the trouble is that you can't research the functionality. That's a word my brother gave me. You can't research the functionality of the tool until you buy it. And so people can tell you, oh, it has a 5 megapixel, 3,800 megapixel camera. Well, that doesn't mean a thing in the world to me. And until I see the picture, and until I operate the camera, the other thing about that camera, too, is it has a delay of some sort. I can't quite see what that is, but I used it a lot yesterday, and I looked at the pictures, and it just never did come into the sharpest focus that I wanted. So by the time I talk to you again, I'll have something to tell you about it. So that is it for that part of the IT moment. The second part of the IT moment only has to do with e-commerce, and that is to say that I haven't yet established myself as an online bookseller. But I'll tell you, I will. I have dozens upon dozens of books to sell, and I'm looking at the guidelines that people are offering, like what types of book will sell well, and I have a lot of them. I have a lot of religious books. I have a lot of metaphysical books, and I have a lot of cookbooks and health books. So that's what I'm going to aim at. Also, I have a lot of books by other than American writers, and those are very exciting. I want to read all of them before I sell them, so I have to get started. Now then, here in the portion of the show, I need for you to put a serious look on your face, and I need for you to open your head and your heart and your ego and listen to some information about a topic that you likely have heard one or two times before, on which you may have no information and in which you may have no true interest. But it doesn't matter whether you do or not, because it's with you and it won't go away. The topic is African American history. Now, when you start to talk about African American history, there are so many pieces of it that no one, if I do an hour show every day this month, I still will not be able to cover it properly. But I am, in any case, going to cover it. And I'm going to begin African American history with the discussion of something that we used to discuss a lot at the ITC. One of my professors called it isms, just an ism. There is an ism for every occasion, you know? And so we're going to start with the isms that Americans live with. A lot of times, never even knowing that we do. So, what I'm going to ask you, what do you believe about African American history? Or do you just simply consider it, like J.B. Stoner, to be a myth? I know you know who J.B. Stoner was. If you don't, somebody in your family can tell you pretty quickly. But listen, is there really even a need for African American History Month? The first thing that I saw when I was on Twitter today was a black mother and father commemorating the death of their son at the hands of the sheriff in Florida. I forget which city it is. Who the child went to a function at the fairgrounds, and somehow or another was accosted by the police. He was injured. He was left on the side of the road. He died as a result of their behavior and their neglect. The question that I want to ask you is this. What does it take for an officer of the law who is sworn to protect and to serve? How does a person who has sworn that oath decide that he has the right to harm a child, a person, an adult, a citizen, just because these people are black? That's one question I want you to consider while we are speaking, because there must be a reason for this. There must be an answer for this. I'm not that I'm taking it upon myself to find all these answers, because I'm not. But I just know that there has to be a reason. Now, the only reason that I know of, the only reason that comes to my mind is just that the law officers hate and detest and despise anybody who shows up in black skin. Now, the next thing that you have to wonder about is, how did that happen? Do you ever wonder how it happens that is only white officers, not only, but always exclusively white officers who commit these heinous acts against their own people? Do you ever marvel that they are never punished? What would you be able to do? What would you like to see done as just punishment for these acts? Because we can be sure that they haven't ended. And since they haven't ended, we're going to be asking this question, these questions, again and again and again. Brings me back again to a series of questions that I ask on my local radio show. That was, do you know why there is an African American History Month? Do you know why an entire month has been designated as African American History Month? If your answer is no, then the next answer is, do you want to know? That was the approach that my middle school and elementary school principal used to take whenever he asked somebody a question and they said, I don't know. He would always ask, well, do you want to know? And, of course, a smart person would say, yes, Mr. Rossa, I want to know, because Mr. Rossa was going to tell you anyway. So I'm pretty much going to do that. I am going to answer those questions. But listen here. There is no way that it can ever be all right for government to act so poorly toward its people. And you can't, no matter what happens, you can't, no matter who ignores it, no matter what anybody else says to you about it, it can't be ignored. It is not going to go away. That's just that. It's not going to happen. So it seems to me that unless something happens in the hearts and the minds of American people, and yes, when I say American people, I do mean American white people. And no, I mean all of us, because you see, I think we all have a part to play in stopping it. Now, we could probably affect the behavior, but we cannot affect the attitudes that cause the behavior. You know, I think it would be a great idea that the next time there's an instance of police murder, that every black person in the country stay in the house for the next 24 hours. That means that there'll be a lot of people who have to take care of their own children. They'll have to wash their own laundry and their own clothes. A whole lot of lawyers will have to go and get their own coffee, make their own copies. And there will just be a whole lot of inconvenience. Now, the inconvenience alone will not affect anybody's attitude, anybody's belief, but it will inconvenience them, and they will have to take another look at what just happened. You know, I'm going now back to the historical foundation for all these isms that we live with. Because, you know, last month when I was talking about tea and the history of tea and how tea found its way around the globe, well, you know, those same ships that carried tea around the globe were carrying human cargo as well. And we know that that human cargo was enslaved people. No, people who were about to be enslaved. African people who were on their way to the new world and the islands to be enslaved. Now, that is not the beginning of racism. It's simply the beginning of racism as we know it. But before the races encountered each other, and before one race put itself in a position of superiority over another race, which called itself superior, was already practicing another ism, patricianism, patriarchism, not patriotism, as in, oh, I love the flag. Patriarchism, P-A-T-R-I-A-C-H-I-S-M, which loosely defined means a system of behavior that is centered around the ego of the male in charge. And nobody living today has any memory of a time when anybody other than males were in charge. So we all are quite familiar with patriarchism and paternalism and sexism. Now, whenever you have a conversation about race with white people, their first response is defense. Well, I never have this conversation with anybody for the sake of an argument. There's too much other stuff to argue about. I have these conversations when I can't get out of it, I'll do it. But I have these conversations because we really need to be enlightened. You know, we really need to understand what we do and why we do it. And denying it simply is not going to get us anywhere. That's not the place to begin. So we have to take a look at this. Somebody other than me, and I'm sure there are plenty of us, but somebody has to be in position to have an intellectual conversation, a responsible exchange on this topic. When I was studying at the seminary, one of my professors would always say that African American history was an embarrassment for white people, and it was shameful to black people. And I never did challenge him on that, and I should have, because my history is not shameful. How did I manage to come to that conclusion? It's not. I don't have, I haven't done anything to be ashamed of. I don't know anybody in my history who did things that I should be today, should be so summarily ashamed of that I wouldn't discuss it. Isn't that interesting? That someone would make a conclusion about that and live with it. Well, I'm sorry, as I said, I'm very sorry that I never did challenge him on that, because that's just not the case. So let's take another look. I was talking about the tea trade, the global tea trade. Now, this is where I am in my topics that I work with. I'm not related to anything. As long as I want to continue to research, I can bring a conversation about anything. But being that the foundation of my work is health, and being that I do have a very inquiring mind, and further being that I absolutely love tea and I love the pursuit, the simple pursuit of good health, certain things are always going to be part of my presentation. And those are the things. It'll always be something about history. There will always be something about health. And somewhere along the way, before I leave, I will say to you something about tea in some form. Now listen, the East Indies Company, according to some, was created by merchants in the eastern part of Europe to protect themselves from such things as piracy on the high seas when they were engaging in international trade. But, however, they didn't stick to just protecting each other. Sometimes there was infighting among them as well. But the East Indies companies were created around 1600, and they included the Dutch, the French, the Danes, the Spanish, Swedes, and the Scots. The ones that we know the most about are the English and the Dutch, the East Indies Company. But I don't remember, as far back as my memory takes me into the into what I studied when I was studying history in high school and before, I don't remember ever hearing that there was a connection between the three-way slave trade, the global spread of tea around the world, and the East and West Indies trading companies. You see, the Boston Tea Party was the result of the taxes on tea that the colonists had to pay, and they revolted, and that's when they threw all the tea out into the harbor. But you know, they never did revolt against the slave trade. Isn't that something? They never did revolt against that. You know, in the colonial days and in the Western days, it was a hanging offense to steal a horse. But people could steal each other's slaves and buy and kill each other's slaves all day long and never, ever, ever even be reprimanded for it, much less hanged. Now, that gives you something to think about, doesn't it? You know, one time I was teaching at an alternative school. All my students were adjudicated, and all but one of them was medicated. And so when February came, obviously, we had Black History Month. Well, nobody in the room had ever studied Black history before. Yeah, all of these children were white. All these children, except one, came from upper financial level homes, you know, upper middle class. Nary one of them had ever studied one word of African American history. And one child, we were discussing the situation, and one child said to me, "I'm glad that you're telling us this," because, and he was only 12 years old. He said, "Because I understand that I know that that certain things happen in certain ways," he said, "but I never could understand why it was." He said he couldn't understand why he was encouraged to avoid the Black students that he went to school with. But you know what else is so interesting? At 12, by the time he was 12 years old, telling that to me, he had already learned that he damn well better not challenge his parents on that. That comes back again to the patriarchism. Now, another exchange that I've had with people very, very often is that we don't teach our children this or that or the other thing. Well, somebody does. I don't know why in the world you would want to admit that somebody other than you has more influence over your children than you do. But somebody teaches it to them. And it can't be the mailman because the mailman doesn't stay there long enough to teach anybody anything. You know, teaching children and modeling their behavior and influencing and teaching them your beliefs, which then become theirs, is the same as raising your children to believe in God. Now, I don't think that there are a lot of parents these days who actually sit with their children and talk to them about Bible stuff. I don't believe it, only because I just don't believe it. That's about the only thing I can say. But I also know that even though they don't do it intentionally, they still do it. Somehow or another, children believe in God in the year 2016 the same way they did in 1916. And people tell you all the time that things are so different now, and people didn't used to this, and people didn't used to that, and people didn't. But people have always done the same types of things. People have always wanted to be comfortable in what they believe. And if you're comfortable in what you believe, then you don't really have to think twice about what you do, because you will always be certain that what you are believing, which your beliefs are guiding your behavior, then you can always be certain and comfortable that you are all right. That nothing is really wrong with the things that you do and the things that you believe. Let me give you an example. One year, one of those years when I was in the seminary, and February came, I sent an email to every white person on my email list, and I asked them to tell me, what does African-American history mean to you? That was about 30 people. Two people responded. Both of them responded in the most idiotic, tones that a Christian would use. That is to say that they, first of all, couched their responses in something that they considered biblical. One woman said that really and truly, she said that she just simply doesn't ever think about that. And she wasn't concerned about it. The only thing she knew was that she was living her life according to what Christ believed. And when life was over, she was going to something like lay down all her troubles at the feet of Jesus or some such shit. And the other one said, oh my gosh, it was something very, very similar, but it was, oh, I don't think in terms of how anyone has been treated. I just know that we all need Jesus or something to that effect. Well, see, if you put the cross before everything that you do, you won't ever have to answer for anything. You just won't. It's just like men who beat their wives, who love the Lord. Well, you know, it says very clearly in the Bible that women are supposed to submit to men, and he believes it and she believes it. And by God, as long as he decides it's good to beat her, then it's her obligation, if not her pleasure, to sit there, look stupid, and take her whipping. Now, what else is there to do? Plenty. The first thing is to think about it. Do you ever think about the things that you believe? You see, because I agree that the unexamined life is not worth living. I mean, that doesn't mean that if I run across a person who's never reconsidered their life, I think they ought to be shot. No. But I do know that when you start to examining the life that you live, it'll put you in position to have more insight into your life, and maybe even into who, not just into your life. I don't mean just in the things you do from day to day, but also it gives you some insight into what you believe. You have to always examine your beliefs. And here's another story for you. We were all sitting around the fire one night when I was working the night shift, and we were doing a quiz that had to do, it was just a kind of an entertainment sports trivia quiz. And a lot of it had to do with specific pieces of African American history. Now, two of us in the room were white. Four of us in the room were black. So there was six, there was five or six of us. But anyhow, there was two of us in the room who were black. When there came a point in the questions when, I knew the answers to the history and the education pieces. There was a young white girl who knew the answers to the entertainment pieces, and then there was a white dude in the room who knew the answers to the sports, etc. Well, I didn't win the game because my points just didn't add up. But I do remember that when a specific question was asked, the young lady who knew all the entertainment questions chuckled, you know, that way that people chuckle when they're uneasy. Well, she chuckled. And then I asked her something like, why did she think it was funny, or something to that effect? And she said, well, I don't know anything about black history. She says, they didn't teach that in school when I was going to school. I said, well, they didn't teach it to me when I was going to school either. But somehow I managed to learn it anyway. And I said, that confirms something that I've already always known, and that is that white people don't give a damn about black history. And you want me to tell you what happened next? The other black girl in the room said to me, stop being so mean. That, my friends, is a sterling, fabulous, perfect example of internalized oppression. Now, you know, outright oppression would have a hard time existing if internalized oppression didn't exist. If oppressed people didn't believe that it was all right for them to be oppressed, the true oppressors wouldn't stand a chance in hell. If they did, they surely wouldn't do it as well as they do. Now, that I can tell you for certain. But internalized oppression does exist. As a matter of fact, internalized oppression was one of the main tools of the three-way slave trade. You see, when you talk about historical slavery, if you look further back in history, obviously further back in history than the colonial slave trade, you will find that there were slaves in what is known as biblical times. But those household slaves were freed every 50 years as a celebration of the Queen's Jubilee, and they were not bought and sold from one household to the other, certainly never one area of the country to another, and the families were never separated. Also, another thing is that those slaves were never dehumanized. Nobody had to enact any laws that said, oh, these slaves are now people. They're only three-fifths of a person, but they are people. Nobody ever said, oh, they're slaves. They don't have any rights that you have to acknowledge. They're slaves. They don't have any rights in court. They're slaves. They can't talk back to a white person, certainly not a white man. Nobody did that. So when you look at slavery in a historical fashion, you really need to look back as far as your time and your efforts and your energy will take you. There is another reason for doing that. Not just so that you will be informed, but being informed is one thing. Understanding the information that's been handed to you is another matter altogether. Once you understand something, generally speaking, once you understand an item or a piece of information or an area of information, you are somehow affected by it. You know, once you understand the connection between sugar and weight gain, you're supposed to be affected by it. You're supposed to do something to adjust your intake of sugar. But once you understand the difference in processed food and whole food, if your goal is better health, then you are supposed to make some adjustments toward whole foods and away from processed food. So once you make discoveries of true information, you have almost a moral obligation to act on the things that you have learned. That means that when the topic comes up, when the topic arises, racism in your town, in your company, in your church, in your home, that you don't deny it. It means that you look at it squarely and you see it. It's kind of like when you look in the face of a child whose parents and grandparents you know. When you look in the face of a child whose parents and grandparents you know, you can look through those next two generations and see the grandparents, because the child looks like his parent that you know, and it looks also like his grandparent that you know. So you're never looking at just one person. You're always looking at a few other people. So that's what it becomes. When that topic is brought to you, you're not simply just looking at the news on TV that somebody, some police officer in Ferguson, Missouri, shot a black boy who was unarmed. You're not just looking at the evening news. You are looking at the fact, number one, this is not the first time it happened. And it goes on and on. You have to keep on peeling back those layers until you get back down to the fact that we live in a racist country, in a racist society, in a racist world. And one way to survive in a racist environment is to become racist yourself. So if you are going to deny it, then you're denying your American DNA. That's what I tell white people in the South, you know, that's where I live. So don't deny that, because if you do, then you are denying your Confederate DNA. Every American has a Confederate DNA, good, bad, and otherwise. We do. That's just all there is to it. So every one of us has an obligation to live up to it. And you don't want to admit it. If you don't admit it, you won't ever be able to live up to it. That's kind of like, you know, people who have drug problems and alcohol problems, et cetera, et cetera. If they don't admit they have these problems, well, they'll never be able to fix them. So the story goes. But I do know that that's true of health problems. Let's just say that a person who is overweight, you know, what your favorite response to an overweight person's response is, oh, I don't look that bad. I'm not that heavy. You know, this dress is not that tight. You know, things like that. But racism is part of the American scene, and it will always be a part of the American scene. The only thing that we can do is counter it. Counter it. And one really simple thing that you can do to counter it is to study your history. Because it's like Dr. John Henry Clark said, the African history, African American history. Those are the missing pages of American history. And unless you fill those in, you're never going to have a full view of what you think is your history. You simply are not going to. You know, the Catholic Church played a major, almost, what shall I say, pivotal, indeed, a pivotal role in the three-way slave trade. Now, I said this to a black woman who was Catholic, and she, I'm sure you can guess what she said back to me. I don't care. And the reason she said she didn't care was because it was so long ago. Isn't that fabulous? I don't care what part the church played in it because it was so long ago. That's right up there with when I was studying at the seminary, there was always some topic or another, some conversation or another about, there were two things about Jesus that just fascinated those people. One was whether or not Jesus was white or black, and the other was whether or not Jesus ever had sex. Now look, I could never join in those conversations because my response was always that y'all do understand that we have women and children and old people living on the street today, don't you? How in the world is it that you can sit and discuss whether or not Jesus ever had sex? And you don't know for certain that Jesus ever existed. You just believe that. Wow. So that was the answer. And then one of my professors actually even said that if he could believe that Jesus had ever had sex, he would never be able to believe everything else that he knew to be true of Jesus. For you to accept any of my opinions as final fact, there is no reason for you to shift your beliefs because of anything that you hear me say. But I will tell you that there is a crying need for you to know why you believe the things that you believe. And I know that I know a plenty of people who firmly believe that white people are superior to us black folks. Yes, I know there are. I know a lot of them. I won't call any names because, you know, it doesn't matter. But I know that's the truth. And is anybody going to challenge that? Are you going to put yourself in position so that you might somehow or another find out that you don't have any reason to think that you are superior to me or to anybody who looks like me or to anybody who doesn't look like you? Is that a chance you're willing to take? Because if you do take that chance, I'll tell you now, my hat's off you. It just absolutely is. And I will be very proud to know you. But if you don't want to know, then keep your head in the sand where it is. And this time next year, when African American history is presented again, you'll still be just as ignorant on this topic as you are today. You still will be incarcerated inside of your own arrogance, and you still will think, yea, verily, it is all right for a man to beat his wife, even if he is Christian, because the Bible gives him that right. You happen to be the woman who March is Women's History Month. And we are going to sit with these isms yet again, because what's going to happen is that you'll find out that they all are connected. And there is no way to unconnect them. But what I'm going to do is lead us right back to the beginning of all these isms that we live with. And they all are going to go back to the same book and beyond. So I want you to please, that's why I said at the opening, please open your head and your heart and your ego and be bold and take a chance on hearing something that you haven't heard before, learning something that you already thought you knew, and feeling something that really and truly might shake you up worse than hell, but it ain't going to kill you. I can promise you that. Now I come to one of my favorite parts of the show. Well, all the parts of the show are my favorite, but I'm coming to that part where I do the book review. And again, I am covering the book entitled Seeds of Change by Henry Hobhouse, Hobhouse, written in 1939, Seeds of Change, and the subtitle is Five Plants That Changed the Destiny, that reshaped the destiny of mankind. And I just want you to know, this book is a very good place to start if you want to study, if you want a primer, a refresher on world history. Those five seeds are cotton, sugar, quinine, tea, and potatoes. So you'll get what happened for me when I was reading this book, and I still am reading it. But what happened to me was that I got some information about the that part of the world over there where Ireland and England and all those places are connected. Well, I didn't know about it. I knew there was a potato famine that caused people to leave Ireland and come this way, but I didn't know what brought on the famine, and I didn't know anything about the health conditions of the people in that part of the world and what happened to them after the famine ended. So if you want to know something, I'll tell you right now, a good place to start is in a book that was written. You're going to also learn for certain, again, in a different fashion, the connection between tea, porcelain, the slave trade, honey, and the Boston Tea Party, and a lot that came in between. You know, I have had people tell me that some of the books I recommended to them, they just simply couldn't read because it shook them up so bad. One of those books was a book entitled Behold a Pale Horse. I handed it to this white guy that I was working with. 2 days later, he handed it back to me. He said that was just something he would not read because it was an expose of some government shenanigans that he didn't want to look at. So he gave my book back to me. I gave it to somebody else who also wouldn't read it. But listen, be brave. Be brave and just live up to, or try anyway, to live up to what you say you believe about yourself, your country, your past, and your history. Because, you know, if you're not careful, you're going to see history repeating itself. But this time, it's going to look different. You know, it's going to be different. And you never know but what the time is soon to come when the police will be shooting at people who look like you. Another book that I want to refer you to, as I know you really want to do some study on African and African-American history, another book that I want to direct you to is a book entitled Parting the Waters. Now, this is only African-American history, so it won't get too deep and too heavy. But the author is Taylor Branch. And the cover photo is a picture of Dr. King and them, somewhere I imagine in Alabama, striding toward freedom, and there's a dark, dark cloud over them. And it was the winner of the National Book Critics Circle Award. This is a really thick book. Wow. It has a great index, and I like books that have big indexes in them. Wow, the index covers the last 100 pages, yeah. And so that it has over 1,000 pages in it now. Do you think I'm ever going to read this book in its entirety? Maybe, but not all at once. It has a lot of pictures in it, and some of these pictures, it will do you good to look at. Like, for example, the pictures of Stokely Carmichael. If you know who Stokely Carmichael was, then you'll be glad to see his picture. There's another book I'm going to tell you about entitled Malcolm and Martin and the American Dream. It was written by Dr. James Cone, the father of liberation theology. Now, remember, I attended the same seminary that Dr. King attended. But as a matter of fact, the seminary where I graduated from has a chapel called King's Chapel. That's where the graduation was held. And I'll tell you something else. Right outside there is the ashes of Dr. Howard Thurman. Dr. Howard Thurman was the chaplain at Boston University when Dr. King went there to study for his doctorate. Dr. Howard Thurman also is credited with being the first preacher to ever have an integrated congregation. Isn't that something? So I'm really proud of that. But I want you to take a look at some books that you haven't already read. I mean, I know you're going to be reading something anyhow. You know, you're just that type of person. So go ahead. You may even find them something you can download on your internet to your device for free. But you still, I want you to read no matter what happens. I just want you to read these books. And then don't be afraid. Knowledge is your friend. It really is. One last book that I want you to know about is, I'm sorry, that book I just mentioned, Malcolm and Martin in America, written by Dr. James Cone. What that book is going to do for you, it's going to let you have a deeper view of Dr. King than you would ever get from watching what GPS, Georgia Public Broadcasting, GPB, presents every year about this time. Because they're never going to tell you that by the time Dr. King died, by the time Malcolm X died, Malcolm was thinking a lot more like Dr. King, and Dr. King was thinking a lot more like Malcolm. Now, that's just one of those little things, as Kevin Trudeau says, they just don't want you to know about, but it's the truth. And then finally, the last book that I have is an African prayer book by Desmond Tutu. It actually isn't by him. It's a collection of his prayers. And he has an introduction in the book. The book actually was produced by his daughter. And a few other people who just collected some African prayers and some of the people who collected and saved some of his speeches and so forth like that. But I like this book, though, and I pilfered it from the place that that I used to work. I'm just going to read something to you here in the last few minutes of the show. We were created by love, for love, and so that we should love. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you, is what God said to Jeremiah. These are words that apply to each of us. We were planned for from all eternity. We were planned for from all eternity. None of us is a mere divine afterthought. None of us is an accident. before the foundation of the world. God shows us to be his children in Jesus Christ. We were loved. That is why we were created. God created you because God loved you. You do not, therefore, need to do anything to earn or deserve God's love. You do not need to, you do not need to impress God so that God will love you. God already loves you, and God will love you forever and ever. There is nothing you can do that would make God love you less. There is nothing you can do to make God love you more. God's love for you is infinite, perfect, and eternal. Tremendous stuff. This was written by Bishop Desmond Tutu. I tell you that it is necessary that humans hear such as this as often as possible, because there are too many opportunities to hear the opposite things that we hear, or the things that hurt us so badly, that keep us divided, that keep us fearful, that keep us running away from our last conversation that would make us think, or our last embrace of someone that we don't know, or our last time to have a chuckle with a stranger. But all of these things can happen, and they should happen. Should never turn away from a chance to be divine. Did you remember that word that he used, divine? Oh my goodness. I am going to continue with this book throughout the month, and I will add some to it. I also will give you some more excerpts from the books previously mentioned today. Okay. That means that I will have to start I'll have to start summarizing the second book of 1,000 pages, but I will do it. So be encouraged, because we are going to live a long time, and that means that we have a lot of work to do. All of us, every one of us, has a lot of work to do. Someone is waiting for you to do the thing for which you were created. Not that you can, so that you can be challenged or degraded that way. It's just waiting on us to cheer for you when you show up and part the waters on your own. Now, sometime during the month of February, we absolutely are going to look into religion and metaphysics and how they affect what we think about love and life. We're going to look at living and dying and how they affect what we believe about love and life and health. We have a lot to look forward to, and it is my pleasure to be the person who presents these to you. I am down to 10 seconds, and I thank you very much for joining me and listening to me. I'd like to remind you that you can read my blog. You can contact me at any time, and I hope to hear from you again soon. This is Sandra Davenport, the Health Reverend. Live well today. Bye.